Welcome back, everybody, to another Ludini Rock and Roll Circus Musicians Mastermind. My name is Lou Lombardi, a.k.a. Ludini. You can find out more about the Musicians Mastermind and all our podcasts at LudiniRockAndRollCircus.com. We have our usual cast of characters today. We've got Kerry J.K. all the way from the U.K. And we have Joe Freeman, no relation to Morgan Freeman. Sorry if you're hoping for that. We might get Morgan Freeman on in the future, but we'll have to see what we can do with that. Today we want to get into the subject of crowdfunding. I titled the episode Crowdfunding: Why It Does Not Work. The key word in that is why. The devil's always in the details. So I didn't say that crowdfunding cannot work. I said why it does not work.
If indeed that's the case.
Yes. And there are things about it that I think a lot of people take for granted or don't go into with a clear head about, don't really think things through. I am guilty party. I have had several crowdfunding adventures that were fantabulous flops. Failed spectacularly because my ignorance on the subject was encyclopedic. And I don't claim to be an expert. What I'm doing is I'm coming to you guys as somebody that has screwed this up. I have talked to people and know people that have been pretty successful with it, but there are certain things you need to keep in mind and certain ways you need to prepare for this. You can't just, I'll throw up a Kickstarter. Everybody loves their favorite indie film that's been Kickstarter funded, and they watch it and they go like, oh, wow, they made this awesome movie. Check it out. It was all funded with Kickstarter. I'm going to do that. No, you probably aren't. You have to dig a lot deeper. I mean, I'm just going to use an example of a film now that I'm just at the top of my head. Stephen Greer, the ufologist, has produced two UFO documentaries that are been really successful, and he did a great job with the crowdfunding and even got like big actors. Thomas Jane is in one of them. Okay. And so people look at that and they go, oh my God, he just got people to fund him on the internet. But Stephen Greer has been in ufology for 30 years. He's been Larry King multiple times. He's been on television many, many times, goes around the whole country lecturing, holds all kinds of symposiums and stuff like that. He has a massive network. Okay. So when you hear about these people that crowdfunded some project and kicked ass at it, take a step back. Who is this person? You know, were they already kind of famous with what they were already doing? So you have to, you know, you can't, it isn't just like throw up a crowdfunding page and get rich. So I want to dispel all that. And that's why I say it does not work, because the way most people who are going to be listening to this podcast are thinking it's going to work because they are micro indie artists like Kerry and I are. It just aren't going to just, people aren't just going to throw money at you. So we can recommend some resources for you guys to read as well. But that is the sort of preamble there to kind of get the topic started. I could tell Kerry's looking at me. He's like, he wants to say something. So,
well, everything that I have to say, you probably have planned in your notes already.
Oh, no, come on in. Come on in.
Well, I'm guessing that one of the things in your notes is the first syllable of crowdfunding. Crowd. And then the very first reason why crowdfunding is going to fail is if you do not have a crowd. And before, when we were talking about the busking, we were talking about people who will spend 20 minutes building a crowd. Only when they have built a crowd do they talk about money. And by that point, they've got everyone knows what they're there for. They know who this guy is. They know what he's doing. And he's going to be able to make a good case for why it is worth the crowd paying him money. So let's start with that, eh?
Well, I absolutely agree. And a lot of people that want to do this have not laid the foundations. I think this is what we're saying here. You have to have that network in place. I have had artists that I've interviewed, indie artists too, guys. Now, I'm not talking about anybody who was famous or anything like that, who've been successful with crowdfunding, but they had a network of people that they could tap into. And when I say tap into, I mean, they really tapped into it. This is not pennies from heaven. Okay. This isn't like, you know, even you might even say, you may even have a fan base. Maybe you've got a really active Facebook group. Maybe you're like, you know, you got a decent downloads on Spotify or whatever, but crowdfunding is a completely different animal, and it needs to be treated as a completely different animal. The people that I know that have been successful with crowdfunding actually really like they built relationships with the crowd. Not just, these just weren't people who just, you know, oh yeah, you know, I know Lou's music, he's good, yeah, we've seen him a few times live. We're talking about in both cases, the two cases I'm thinking about, these were people that were, these people reached out to their audience like in a very personal way. There was a lot, I spent a lot of time doing direct messaging on Facebook and Twitter, not automated direct messaging, like actual talking to, hey, you know, I know you've been out to see the band a whole bunch of times. Here's what we're doing. And what do you think about it? Is this something you might want to be involved in, you know, and getting, and then when people did donate, they followed up immediately with personal messages. They actually sat down and wrote thank you notes to people, sent letters to people. In both instances, it was really for all intents and purposes, was a full-time job to get their projects funded. It wasn't so the way most people do it is not like that. The way most people do it, and the reason why it does not work, is because most people they might have maybe they feel that they have the crowd. Maybe they're looking like, well, I got a lot of downloads, I got a lot of views on YouTube, or whatever. There's way more to it. If I may, Joe, is there anything you want to chime in on before I continue, or Carrie and I go on?
Sure. So crowdfunding, a lot of times you see these platforms online, and they're, you know, you see that people put together a page and then they had so much donated to them and their goal's this, and they're 90% before that huge number that they were trying to achieve. And you start to think, oh, well, I'll just throw up a page and I'll get my project funded. No problem. It's not like that. Crowdfunding is a marketing campaign. The page that's on this platform, people normally don't just go to these platforms and be like, hey, I'm going to donate to somebody today. Let's see who I want to donate to. I think, let's donate to Joe. Yeah, I don't know him, but he looks good. Maybe. You know what I mean? You have to format the crowdfunding. If you're going to use the platform, which that's a big question in itself, whether you're going to use their platform or create your own crowdfunding campaign on a platform of your own. But, you know, let's digress. When you set up the page, you've got to think about copy, design, what the offer is going to be. You know, if you donate at this level, you're going to get this kind of thing back. There's a lot of stuff to think about. And Lou's right. Maybe it's not a full-time job, but it's a full-out marketing campaign that you've got to think about where you're getting the audience from, where are they going to go, what do they want, why do they care about your project in the first place. You've got to think about the emotions they're feeling over the project, all that stuff. So, like, it's not just throw something up and you're going to get money. I had a client one time who did that. They were like, oh, well, I'm just going to have my environmental project covered. I'm going to throw it up on crowdfunding and they're going to pay for everything. And I'm like, you got to get on video. You got to talk about why it means something to you. Talk about why it means something to them. You know what I mean? There's a whole campaign involved in it in order to get a crowdfunding platform or campaign to work.
Well, the platform, that's the whole thing. Carrie and I've talked about this before, and I think what the platform helps people do is gives people some feeling of legitimacy or safety, in the sense that, you know, they know what Kickstarter is, they know what Indiegogo is, they know what Patreon is, and so they feel like, you know, they could feel kind of protected, you know, with their investment is kind of protected, because this is a, you know, it's like PayPal. Venmo. Like when PayPal first came out, people were like, oh my God, I don't want it. But PayPal has reassured everybody and through doing good work for what, a couple decades now, that, you know, they've been on top of stuff. Yes, they had problems at different times, but they stayed on top of stuff. So people are way more comfortable now when you put up a PayPal link on your, you know, to pay for anything. I'm not talking just about crowdfunding. So it's the same thing with the crowdfunding platforms is as these become more popular and people recognize them, they've seen yours, they've seen other people's. So the platform gives people a little bit of like reassurance. It's like Carrie and I've talked about, like he sells he has a little family business where they sell things on Etsy. And one of the reasons why they use Etsy, because it's a popular platform. People know it. They feel comfortable. That's why selling your stuff on Etsy or Amazon can be like a, and they handle a lot of the legal BS in case there's a problem, stuff like that. So the platform can help you, of course, but it is not going to do anything for you if you don't have the crowd. The other thing I wanted to talk about in terms of the crowd is getting, before you even do this, find out if your audience is the kind of audience that would support a crowdfunding campaign. They may not be interested in that. I mean, something I've run into with my niche, because I'm old, is I got a lot of people that want to give me cash for stuff. They don't want to even pay with a credit. They don't want to put their credit card online. They don't want to pay with PayPal. They're like, well, can I just, I've got people send me like money orders and checks in the mail and stuff like that because they're not comfortable with doing something like that online. Okay, so if that's the case, this is one of the reasons probably why my crowdfunding is never taken off, because I think a lot of people that I'm dealing with, that seems foreign to them. It's not something they're comfortable with. They don't understand it. So make sure that your crowd will be cool with that. That's something that they're hip to, they can get with. It depends, you know, Amanda Palmer rocked that shit. I mean, she's a different audience than I do. She's a different audience. You know, her clientele isn't going to be the same clientele as Joe's, and it's not going to be same clientele or same kind of fan base as Carrie's. The other thing is, before you do the crowdfunding, get people prepped, like start talking about it, start putting it out there, start getting feelers for what kind of value that you're going to give in return for crowdfunding. So kind of, you know, if you have a really active, this is what, keep going back to Facebook groups, but if you have an active Facebook group, or you have an active Twitter with, you know, fans that are really engaged, or active email list, right, Joe? If you have an active email list, reach out to those people and start floating the idea. Hey, I'm thinking about doing this thing. We want to do a new record, or we want to do a tour. We need some, you know, we need $20,000 or whatever. I'm thinking about doing this. If you have hardcore fans, you know, the guy that's the fans are that are at every show, the people that buy every t-shirt, you know, those people, you want to talk to them personally. You don't, do not send an email blast to them. Call them on the phone. Take them to lunch, sit down with them and say, look, because those people will help spread the word about your crowdfunding. They'll be like, they'll tell other fans that maybe aren't super fans yet to like, hey, you know, Ludini is doing this thing. It's going to be really awesome. And, you know, I'm supporting it. And here's why I think you should too. And so you can count on those people, even if those particular people maybe don't give you all that much money, they can help spread the word and get interest whooped up. But you got to lay some groundwork. Got to have a crowd. You got to find out if that crowd is hip to crowdfunding, and then you've got to start floating into music. Start to get them kind of pre-interested, because there's nothing worse. And this is where crowdfunding can hurt you, because we've all seen these pages, right, where you go to Kickstarter or whatever, and you know the guy's like trying to get 10 grand, and how many people have donated? Like zero or three. You know, he's got like $12 towards it. That's the kind of stuff that's like, it actually makes you look bad, because it makes you look like,
very important how quickly you get those donations. So in the first couple of days, you want to get a number of donations in order, and preferably if you can get testimonials from people in order to show that you're the real deal. You have authority. You follow up with what you're saying you're going to do, that kind of stuff.
Kind of sounds like when a movie comes out, like when Hollywood release a movie, the opening weekend is everything. And if it bombs in that opening weekend, then it's a bomb forever. Even if it goes on to make money internationally, then it will still have that opening weekend
held stigma. And that's, again, just to digress briefly, that is something that is more of, has become a thing in the past 20 years. Before there was home video and things like that, there was, it was a plenty of opportunities for movies to take their time to kind of like build word of mouth. Not now, man. Like if that thing doesn't crush it, I mean, there's movies that like, I was like really looking forward to go seeing. And then all of a sudden, like it had only been out 2 days and there was a YouTube video. Why blah, blah, blah movie failed. I'm like, wait, it came out. Like how could it fail? But he's Carrie, you're absolutely right. So getting the, and Joe, you're right too, is like getting something all, you know, there quick. And you'll do that by A, having the crowd and making sure that they're prepped. They know what you're doing. They're hip to it. They're ready to hit that donate button the day it goes live so that you're not sitting there looking like it's also demoralizing to do as well. If you don't, just personally demoralizing to put something that like that together only to get nobody interested. I mean, you want to have that experience? I don't think anybody wants that experience.
Well, just like any other marketing campaign, especially if you're doing it yourself. Like I said, there's a lot of copy. There's a lot in the offer. There's a lot to put together.
Well, that's what I want to talk about next was the message. Campaign. So why don't you elaborate on the message, Joe?
It takes practice and time to build that copy and know what to say in the crowdfunding. And there's also other things about the crowdfunding you need to know, like, you know, what kind of crowdfunding are you going to do? Are you going to do an all or nothing campaign? Like you're going to collect money and then if it fails, you're going to return that money? Or are you going to let people know, hey, you're donating towards this, you know, building this. And, you know, if for some reason we don't meet that amount, then we're going to give you a consolation prize and you're going to be, you know, the front runner on the next thing. You know, there's a lot to it. I know people who've run marketing campaigns and they had people pay ahead of time and they just did the recordings and stuff. And it's not, you know, music, but it's like information product and courses. They just did the recordings and stuff only if they got so many people. So you've got to think about stuff like that.
Sell it before you make it is what you're saying. Like I worked with Tom Hess for a long time. He was a coach, wildly successful music guy. And, you know, he would tell me all the time on our calls, sell it first. You can always, you know, just put that money aside and then you can always do something like, you know, something happened, our distributor fell through, blah, 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 and return their money. But, you know, you want to make sure that you're pretty sure that's not going to happen. But if you don't, this is a way you know for sure. Because if people are already willing before it's even out to give you money for it, then you know that you have something that's resonating with people.
I mean, I guess you know that whole selling it first, that was the music industry, certainly at an independent level throughout the 80s.
Expand on that,
Gary. Well, the independent producers who went on to chart, and this was when it first got to the point where independent labels were starting to come through and get in the charts, whereas before it would have been just the majors that had that sewn up. And one of the things that they had to do for that to be possible at all was everything they did would be borrowing off the next record. So none of them had the money up front. It's like when Pete Waterman, Stock Aitken and Waterman, was sort of saying that everything they did was a promising against when the money comes from this record, then it'll be the next bit. When we buy there's this whole thing about him buying a desk and then having to avoid paying for it until the record's been a hit so they can do the next one. If you've ever read the manual, the KLF manual, which is another important book, we've talked about that before. It was when they were the Time Lords and they went on to become the KLF or the K Foundation. But they did a book in 1987, I think it was, that was how to have a number one hit single. And one of the things they said straight up was, they even had a guarantee at the front of it. It said, if you follow everything in here to the letter and all the principles, you can have a number one hit single. However, that is all we promise. There won't be riches that come with it. Sex will still be a problem. We can't even promise you'll be famous, or we can promise that you're single. And but one of the things that came from that as well, they've had certain things in there. So like one of the conditions was you had to be unemployed and signing on. Because if you had a job and were trying to do it as well, then you wouldn't be able to. And so part of the manual as well is how to carry on doing it and not letting the government know that you're working when while failing unemployment. And they also said throughout there as well, you're going to have to spend money you don't have. So it's always about looking forward to that moment. And then it looks to this point where you've finally got some money coming in. And that's when this is the moment when you tell your accountant to pay this guy, pay that guy, pay that guy. And then talks about this guy. So I don't know about the major level, but certainly the independent level throughout the 80s. And when you look into it, all these record labels, certainly the UK ones, and I'd say almost certainly the US ones as well. And we were talking about the sort of level of Z or Food Factory, and Stock Aitken and Waterman are a great example too. All of them had to shift money about because, I mean, another thing was that these labels weren't generally run by great businessmen. And they'll be quite open about that in their memoirs, that they sucked at business and they just did it out of passion. But even having said that, you do notice when you read their stories, they're always borrowing against the next success to fund the current one. No one had money up front. And even when it came in, it went straight out again on something else. I mean, this is another thing about the music industry. It doesn't have nearly as many fortunes in it for anyone as people think. And this is one of the reasons everything goes back into it to feed the next thing.
Right. that is a topic that I want to talk about on another thing is money and cash flow and how to navigate those waters. That might be an entire series.
The main thing I want to say about cash flow, just in related to crowdfunding, is, you know, it is good to have an audience in the beginning and to reach out to that audience, especially if you have anybody that's an influencer or has authority in the industry that you're in or that kind of stuff. But like I said before, you got to look at crowdfunding like a marketing campaign. Mm-hmm. There's a lot to put into it and you've got to build up, momentum. So like at first you're rolling the ball up the hill. You're trying to like just do everything you can to get the message out, you know, use as many different hooks as you can. Hooks are just, headlines or ads, things you're giving away, you know, trying to go on places. You're just trying to get as much attention as you can to the campaign. And you're rolling that ball up the hill and you're like, you know, I'm doing a 30-day campaign so I'm going to start 30 days beforehand and I'm rolling the ball. And you don't really make money if you're going to till later on in the process. So if I set the end of my campaign to be, you know, 60 days from now and the first 30, I'm just rolling the ball up the hill. I don't actually expect for a lot of people to pay the larger numbers until right before the campaign's over. Because a lot of people will wait. They'll be like, oh yeah, this is that thing I wanted to do. And so you've got to try to get some way for to keep touching them over and over and over and over and over again, just like a marketing campaign. So, you know, whether that's, you know, retargeting ads, you already got them on an email list, they're already looking at your YouTube channel, they're already listening to your podcast, whatever they're doing. You need to keep rolling that ball up the hill and hopefully before the end, the ball builds up some momentum and rolls down the hill. It's not a plateau at the top or you don't run into another hill. You don't always know what's at the top of that first peak. But if it's something that means something to you, it's something that you know is going to serve people and you know you feel is really going to mean something to them, then it's worth doing. It's not always just about the money. So like, you've got to really consider like, is this thing I'm crowdfunding? Is it going to mean something to the person on the other end who's getting it? Are they going to, you know, are they going to feel emotionally intellectually connected to it. You know what I mean? Think about what they're feeling, how emotionally attached, or what problem it solves for them before you start writing your marketing and before you even decide to build the campaign.
Right.
Like Lou was saying, if you already have an audience, you can gauge that. You can gauge that ahead of time, you know, pre-sell it to your audience that you already have. And if they really are like, hey, this is a really cool thing, then you know you got a winner. Okay, let's invest some more time. And I'm saying more because you've already invested some time into the copy just to get your people that's already on your list to pay. But then you got to refine it for people who are a little colder to you, who you don't have authority, you don't have like trust and like with, to start paying as well. So that the people who are already in your list and are your raving fans, they can say, hey, you know, I'm paying, I've donated to Lou to build his next CD. And Lou wants me to give you his first CD so that you can, hear his music. If you really like this music, dude, I really think we should really put into this, type of thing. Maybe not in those exact words, but you get what I'm saying.
Well, that's where writing good copy comes in.
Yeah. So, I mean,
something else there that you sort of began to touch on, and like one of the first things I do when I sort of see somebody, especially if it's somebody you haven't had contact with previously, is like, what have you done already? Mm-hmm. I mean, like, because everybody has pipe dreams and ideas, and hey, one day I'm going to do this. And I think a lot of Kickstarters that fail, that's all they have. Then the guy says, I'm going to make a time machine. Great. How far have you got? Well, I haven't started yet, but give me some money and I will. Yeah, get out the door. You know, it's whereas if you could say, I've done this and I've had this and now I just, and that, even coming back to something else I want to compare this with from the bigger world, you guys have a show called Shark Tank. We have one called Dragon's Den. But what they both do is like when people are trying to get investments in their enterprises and their businesses, they go there and they do a presentation. And at the end of it, they'll say, I'm looking for this much money in exchange for this much of the business. And it can be instructive to watch the ones that succeed, but especially the ones that fail. And the ones that fail generally will be because their business plan just wasn't thorough enough. It wasn't convincing. They can't convince the people there that giving them their money. And as there's one of the guys that does the UK one says that, he gave an example of like, it offends him when people stand in front of him, they say, what do you want the money for? And they say our salaries. Because he says, this is the money this is my money that I use for my family to put food on the table and to keep the house over their head. And you want me to just give it to you so you can have a lifestyle. That's not how it works. You've got to show me what it is you're actually trying to build and what I'm trying to be a part of here and how it's going. It's not just so much about how we're, I mean, you can think about all the bits about like profit projections and all that, and that's all part of it. But the main thing is you want to know that there's actually a plan to do things efficiently. And the plan isn't just to throw money at something and hope for the best. Another thing now, especially at the independent level, everyone knows what you can do for free. And everyone knows that you can do stuff print on demand, that you can do this, that, and the other. How are you going to demonstrate that what you are putting together is on a higher level than that? What have you done already that you can do without that Kickstarter that you are now going to take to the next level by getting that investment? Right. And if you don't have a convincing answer to that, then it's going to fail.
Yeah. Who are you? Do you have an attractive character? You know, can I take who you say you are and trust in that? Is your character someone that I can identify with and follow or listen to or believe in or build some kind of likeness to? What have you done lately? You know what I mean? So, like, are you respectable? Like, have you done anything recently? All this should be in your copy. You know, what is the idea? What are the details of what you're trying to do? You know, do I believe that what you're trying to do will work, or do I like or appreciate what you're trying to do? You know, if I have a connection to your character and I appreciate what you're trying to do, in some cases, and it's not a lot of money, I may, you know, I may donate just because I want to show you that it's worth following your dream. So it's not always a business project. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's more of a, you know, I, right now I have extra money and I want the karma of donating to somebody. I want to, what they call it, thive. I always pronounce that wrong. You know, I want to give tithe. You tithe. That's yeah. it. I want to give you some money in order for, you know, me to have donated to something and to know that that's going to come back to me someday because I feel good and it blesses me.
I think the other aspect of it, well, I think kind of what you're sort of talking about.
Attractive character.
Yeah. Is that people who are part of a niche can feel, well, I don't know the specifics of what this guy is doing, but I know that this guy, you know, I've been following him for a while. I dig what he's, you know, I dig, you know, so, you know, this is a way I can show some support. You know, like Carrie, like this is something that Carrie and I have talked about on other podcasts, other calls, is let people pay versus making them pay. And so this is a situation where you demonstrate very high value to that niche. I mean, maybe it's, to some people, you're like demonstrating, they're like, I hate that. I don't want, you know, I hate mimes, you know, I'm not going to give you anything. But other people are like, oh my God, you're a mime. I'm so passionate about, my, you know, how can I help? So you want the how can I help people, and you want to be able to make sure you give those people in that niche like amazing value, over deliver, you know, on every, you want to already be doing that. You already want to have those things in place. You already want to have that sort of reputation in that niche, is like, this is a guy in this particular that we follow in X niche that I'm into, who is always over delivering. I, you know, it's like, I'm thinking about some podcasters and YouTubers that I love who I feel like I, you know, always blown away by their shows. I'd be more likely to throw them something, not without even really caring what I got so much in return. You know, if I knew that they needed, you know, to, you know, they were, you know, trying to meet some financial goals so they could keep giving that and keep creating or take that value that they're already giving and take it to another level, I'd be like, you know, I know, like, and trust this person. So, you know, here, I'll give something. but it is built on, Carrie said something really good, built on past success, and it is built on high value. To sort of paraphrase, I think what you were saying, just build high value into the campaign. So you, people already know you're giving high value. You're not some guy just out of nowhere. You've already been, and you have some success. Now, I would just want to kind of wrap up on this last idea, and I want to go around the room and get your opinions. You guys is that's a that's not a Pittsburgh yinses. Yinses is opinions is. What is the difference, or why should somebody choose just the traditional business model? Okay, without, you know, doing any of this crowdfunding stuff, just, you know, make the stuff, build the audience. We're saying that's a given. Okay, we've built the audience. So what kind of person should just choose the traditional, here's my merch, here's my stuff, here's my whatever, just it's $19.99, take your card, come to a show, buy it, whatever, versus crowdfunding? What kind of person does crowdfunding versus just regular old business stuff?
Well, that traditional business method still had a revenue source. And the revenue source would have been a bank loan. It would have been a record company. It would have been a management deal. It would be somebody who's footing the bills.
It could be your personal money.
Personal money, then great. Good for you. Great that you had that to start with. You still need the business nonce to make sure that you still have it at the end of the process. I mean, what was the story? If you want to make $1 million and at a business, start with $2 million. Because it's... plug in whatever cliche you want at this point, you know, if sales ears were silk purses, all of these things, but But yeah, I mean, like that, what you just called the traditional business. I think this is the other thing as well. And I've mentioned before how all of this online stuff and what everyone sees is this new revolutionary way of doing things. It's exactly the same as the old way of doing things. What's changed is where is who you're approaching. And it sort of democratized it. I mean, even crowdfunding, there is an equivalent in traditional business, and it's called cooperatives. And cooperative business structures worked exactly the same way that crowdfunding does now. That's what it was. So none of this has just landed from space. It's ideas that come through. And now we have this this mechanism where everybody can find each other and can talk to each other. Means that the savvy people who can exploit it can then use the same old principles that were there all along, but in ways that now work in new ways. And it also means then that whereas before you would have to convince a guy in a pinstripe suit in a bank somewhere, or somebody who only sees if you can get it into a mainstream radio and the Billboard charts, and if not, you're a waste of time. At least now there are other avenues there, because there are other people you can go to. That you could still go to those people beforehand, it was just harder. Now we can, the flip side of that, it is actually easier to reach all these other people now. Of course, what balances it out, though, is that everyone else can too, which is why you have to do a much better job of it.
Yeah, and you can't be a scam. You have to do a good job at it. Just everything we're talking about here, the reason why people fail at it is because I don't think that most people are scamming people, but I think that they're just doing it badly. They're just doing they're not following these concepts. And I don't know. This is not a discussion on the, five things that will make your crowdfunding campaign successful. This is the sort of the values, the sort of things you should have in place and how you should be thinking about this going into it. I think that's where we're coming from. What about you, Joe? What do you see? I mean, I have a business. You have a business. Joe, did you jumpstart your business with crowdfunding, or did you do? I know what a lot of entrepreneurs are, and I'm just going to say it. Okay, I'm just going to say it because this is like the dirty little secret in the world of entrepreneurs is what a lot of people do is they run their credit cards up. They just go, a lot of people do. That's how they buy the courses. That's how they get stuff going. They finance it on credit. I mean, it's no different than going to the bank, to get the building, to buy the equipment, to do the machine. People that are working from home will get these things started on credit cards. I'm not judging that. I'm not saying it's good or bad, but just be aware. Don't feel bad. If anybody's listening to this and saying, well, that's how you got things started, don't feel bad about it. Just, don't get yourself in trouble, but it's not uncommon.
I think actually you made a connection to what I was thinking while Carrie was talking. So let me first talk about how I started. I went to graphic design school years ago. I worked for a commercial printer. I learned HTML and CSS. I built up a reputation at that company, and I built up a certain amount of skills. When I realized that the entrepreneur area also was using some of the skills that I already use to go online and make build leads, get people to listen to them or purchase from them, I was like, well, wait a minute. I'm already doing this for, the printing company, and I'm already building campaigns for people like Heinz Ketchup and Ghirardelli Chocolates and a few of those. Why can't I do this for myself? So where my problem was that I was very technical and design oriented. I had a guy from a casino one time tell me, well, your design and technology don't matter. It's all about my offer. And literally, he looked at me very seriously like that with a very arrogant attitude. And at first, I got kind of butthurt over it. I was like, well, what do you mean? Like, your campaign can't go live without me. But when I got out into working for myself, even after getting certified with ClickFunnels and a few other things, and the reason why in these calls, a lot of times I refer to copy, is because I had additional skills I needed to learn. I needed to learn how to create an offer. I needed to learn how to build value. I needed to learn how to You know, do those things that makes the campaign message and the campaign itself work to build value for the person on the other end of the campaign. So I've taken years doing it, but luckily enough for me, or however you want to put it, I've been able to keep myself living modestly, because there are people out there who the technology and design are a challenge for them. So I never really had to take out a large credit card debt. At that point when I decided that this is something I wanted to do, my mindset was that it would sustain me, and it has. That's all I can say. But one of the things I'm lacking in is that until this mastermind and a few things I've done recently, is I was terrified to go in front of people and let them know who I was and what I do. And if you can't go in front of people in some way on video, if, you know, you're a good writer, you go out and meet people, however that is, and let them know what you do and know that you're have the confidence and the past history to know that your values in what you're doing, you're going to struggle. And you're going to struggle no matter how you try to sell your products or your offers or how much they help someone else, unless you have the money to pay someone who can create the copy and the marketing for you. So if I was a musician, and I'm thinking about crowdfunding, like, what music have I created in the past that I can share for free? You know, how do I prove that I have some legs to stand on as far as being a musician and being part of that community? Like, Lou, you have the podcast, you know, you have your inner circle, stuff like that, and you're starting to share your music. So that puts some legs under you. Without any legs, people don't believe you like anymore. There's so many people out there trying to make money online that you've got to show your value. So before I started thoughts of a crowdfunding platform, I would think of those things like, have I done anything that's going to identify with those people? And do I already have a following? Is my following a very warm, a hot, or a cold following? Because depending on that, depends on your messaging. It depends on what your offer should be. And it depends on how long the campaign should go for. You know, your first campaign may be a lot longer because you haven't built up that value. And now you've got to publish all the time in order to build up the value, in order for people to believe you, identify with your attractive character, which is you. You know what I mean? And lately I've been thinking about that a lot. Like, I read Russell Brunson's Expert Secrets a long time ago, and I just read it on a basis of, you know, let's download some information in my brain. But the reality is that there may be better books on this in some ways, but when I'm building my character, is it a character that people are going to identify with? As I'm growing, am I growing in the direction that is going to get me where I visualize myself being 10 years from now? And will the clients and partners identify with me as a person and with my character? You know what I mean? And if that's the case, like, if you have these things working for you, if you have the authority, you have a warm audience, you've already been publishing, people already like your stuff, they're more likely to donate. So Lou, you were talking about, you know, some of those YouTubers that you listen to their stuff all the time. You're more likely to donate to them because they've given you so much in the past than you are just anyone off the street. You know what I mean? If you guys, because you're in the industry, if you guys hear some music that's really, really good and you're like, man, that's really good. And then that person was to say, hey, you know, I've put out XX CDs. You guys have all been listening to them. I want to do another one, but it's going to need this much production cost, blah, 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 blah. And you're like, you know what? That's right. They've got to get their sound right. They've got to make sure their vocals are at the right level. They got to do this. They got to do that. And it sounds right to you. You're like, oh, you know what? I was there one time. I wanted my CD to go out, and there was no way it was going out without some help. And I'm going to help this person. So I guess what I'm saying is it's a constant development of yourself and knowing like what resources you have available to you. And publishing a song or whatever it is that you need to publish in order to get known in your industry is what you have to do.
With that, I think that's there's a lot of great nuggets in there. Those of you that are listening to this podcast, you might want to just go back and listen to Joe's closing statements there. Again, there was a lot of really good stuff there. We don't have time to unpack all of that. I think as we go through future podcasts, we will be hitting on these because they're all things that you need to be thinking about anyways. Your character, your niche, how well do you relate to those people? Are you giving them the value that they are looking for? Are the all of it, are you presenting something in such a way that you're saying we can, if we get some help, we can make it even better? You know, think about all those things. There's show notes here. Carrie, anything you want to add before we wrap up for today?
I agree. That's I think we left it on the sort of good cliffhanger there. We basically said it. Well,
okay. What's your website, Carrie?
KJKmusic.co.uk.
And Joe, what's your website?
OrangeTreeMarketing.com.
All right, guys. Thanks so much for hanging out. It's another Ludini Rock and Roll Circus Musicians Mastermind. Check back at the Ludini Rock and Roll Circus.com for upcoming stuff like this. And if you'd like to join our Musicians Mastermind, the easiest way to, there's not an easy way to do it right now, but the best way to do it is just shoot me an email, lou@loulombardimusic.com. We're selective about who we let in the group, but it's a good group of people that are supportive, and you can share ideas and get some great ideas. Have a great week, everybody. We'll catch you on the next Ludini Rock and Roll Circus Musicians Mastermind.